You are now listening to the Sports Life Talk podcast, hosted by Kevin Tumnus and Serge Vasudevic, where life without sports is just talk, on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to episode 15 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. I'm KT with my man Serge. Serge, how's it going?
I'm good, brother. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm barely here, but I'm alive, man. I'd rather be looking, what is it, looking up instead of down? Or down instead of up? One of them.
Down instead of up.
Yeah, that one. So we're going to move right on, and we're going to go into our ring wear segment, because today is WrestleMania down in New Orleans. Man, we should have been down there.
Yeah, it would have been a good little weekend shindig to be down there, man. I'm sure it's crazy out there, and it would have been a great event to go to. I think WrestleMania is definitely one of those events on the bucket list to be able to make, you know, in my lifetime. So hopefully here one of these years I'll be able to go.
Yeah, let's try to do that next year. Or I think they're coming back in June. The WWE is Raw. We need to go check that out. Maybe we can meet Mandy Rose. All right, so we're going to give you our WrestleMania predictions in this episode of The Ringworm, and we're going to start off with Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax. Who do you got?
I got Alexa Bliss. I know that it would be kind of cool to see Nia Jax win, but I just think that Alexa Bliss, you know, she's been a good champion for the WWE, and I think they see that, and they hyped up the fight pretty good, especially the whole, you know,
the bullying storyline.
Right. So, but I think at the end of the day, Alexa Bliss just, you know, kind of what she brings to the table for what they are trying to do. I think she'll end up keeping her championship, but I think it'll be a really good match though, and then they'll definitely make sure to put Nia in a lot of engagements with Alexa, where, you know, she'll get that popularity even more so now.
I'm going Nia Jax only because of the bullying storyline. And I think one thing they can do is bring The Rock out to kind of, you know, really push her over since that's her cousin.
Right.
So if she doesn't win it tonight, you know, good and well, they have a rematch tomorrow.
Right.
Either way, she's going to end up the champion. I think it's about time for her to get that.
Right. So this, that would be something that they would be better off doing, is letting Alexa keep it tonight, have a rematch tomorrow, and then on actual Raw, be able to see, somebody change championships. And usually they do things like that right after WrestleMania, so that the hype is still there behind the fight, even though they already fought the previous night. The hype is still going to be there, especially depending on how the match ends.
Yeah, I think they'll put on a good match. Of course, Nia Jax should be dominant. I'm expecting Mickie James interference, so we'll see how that goes. Now, let's move on to the match that I think is going to shut down WrestleMania, and that's AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Who do you got?
I got Shinsuke, man. I think he's, you know, winning Royal Rumble. Just his kind of story, how he came into WWE. I mean, both of these guys can wrestle their minds out, man. I mean, they're really, really good at their craft. So, but I think Shinsuke just kind of, I mean, he's got the, you know, popularity. I mean, AJ Styles got a popularity too, but it's kind of like, you know, really two good guys that are kind of going at it. But if you want to see high quality wrestling match without any of the sideshow, this is the match you definitely want to see.
And I wish they would make this the main event, but we know that'll be Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. And I'm going to go Shinsuke too, only because that dude was the stuff at Next, and they haven't really used him well in SmackDown till, you know, lately.
Right.
And I think with the brand, when they're going to do another draft, Shinsuke will be like the man on SmackDown. You move AJ Styles to Raw, so I'm going Shinsuke with you. Let's move on to another match that I'm pretty sure we both got the same person. Charlotte Flair versus Asuka. Who do you got?
Got Asuka. Asuka obviously is on her undefeated streak. I think obviously Charlotte, you know, just, you know, she brings like her last name, the Flair, to the whole match. And just her charisma. But Asuka, I mean, she's a good wrestler too. Charlotte obviously is a great wrestler just because of her background, where she was brought up. But this is also going to be a really, really high quality, intense match that probably will go for a long time. I think they want to make sure that they show that, you know, these two are like at the top of our women's division. And so with that being said, that they are able to be showcased at a high level. But I see Asuka pulling it out so that she can keep her undefeated streak.
This is what I see happen. I just really thought of that. During this match, Charlotte and Asuka, they're going to beat each other down so bad that Carmella's going to come in, cash her money in the bank in, and she's going to win it. So that basically, Asuka really didn't lose.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that's going to happen. So I got Carmella winning that match.
A little surprise.
Yeah, I threw a little twist in there. Okay, so we got Cesaro and Sheamus versus Braun Strowman and a tag team partner to be announced. Who you got?
Whoever Braun Strowman has doesn't really make a difference. Braun Strowman going to beat these guys up by himself. I think it's time that he's got to have some kind of belt around him. So I don't think it matters. It would be cool. It would be nice to see who that person will be, because obviously I would like to think that it will be somebody that will be wrestling with him going forward, also defending the tag team championship. So it would be I'm going to go with Braun Strowman and whoever he teams up with, man, because he's got to win.
I'm going to go Strowman too, and I think it's going to be Strowman and Rey Mysterio, because I want to say that he was just let out of his contract with whatever promotion he was in.
Okay.
So I would rather see Lashley come in, because could you imagine those two together? That'll be an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go Braun Strowman, even though I do like the bar. They do have hella chemistry, man. I like the way they built that up, and I wouldn't be mad if they won it. But like you said, this time for Strowman, you got the strongest guy. Okay. It's time for him to have a bet. I do agree with that one. So we're going to go ahead and talk about this one, the main event, Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this because we already know the outcome.
Right. Roman Reigns is definitely going to be the new Universal Champion. He's going to pretty much get put over by Brock Lesnar. Roman Reigns obviously already, beat The Undertaker before. Brock Lesnar, obviously, as most people have heard, is headed back to the UFC. So since he's already a part-time wrestler, it only makes sense that he kind of passes it down to Roman Reigns. And with the beatings that he's been giving Roman Reigns the last few weeks on Raw, it's kind of one of those, like, he overcame the odds and looked the title at the end. And, towards the end of the show, this is what we're going to see.
Well, I will give Roman Reigns credit for this. He has come a long way. He has become a better in-ring performer. And on the mic, he's gotten a lot better. So I'll give him that. I can see what they see in him. Plus his bloodline, the Samoan bloodline. So I get it. But we know it's going to be Roman Reigns.
Right.
So this is going to be another entertainment match here. The Miz versus Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins. I know who you got, but let the listeners know.
I got Finn Balor, man. I love Seth Rollins as a wrestler, too. And obviously The Miz, I mean, he's just super entertaining. But Finn Balor, he's another guy, kind of like Strowman. I think it would be really cool to see him with the championship belt around his waist. And he's somebody that can take the title and actually, kind of be like a very young Shawn Michaels. Like when he was first coming up, I think he has the whole package. And he's a tremendous wrestler. And this would be what he needs because, obviously with his injury when he got the Universal Championship before, it's time to, go ahead and give him something now.
Hey, Serge, when my hand goes up, your mouth goes shut. I'm going to go with The Miz. Only reason I'm saying that because I want to see the buildup from Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins because they can put on a hell of a show if it's just those two. So I'm going to go The Miz winning this one.
Okay.
So let's talk about this one that should be pretty entertaining. I don't know how long it's going to last, but it should be pretty entertaining. Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle versus Stephanie McMahon and Triple H. Who do you got?
Well, before even the fight, the most cool thing is going to be to see Triple H's entrance.
Oh, yeah.
Triple H's entrance is always like one of the hotter commodities out there, man. I mean, he's always brings out something special, but... I think it only made sense to obviously have Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle win the match so that they can kind of build up her storyline, depending on how she, how she does in the ring. Obviously, I'm really looking forward to see how she actually wrestles. You know, seeing, you know, just her in-ring technique. You know, when you do get hit, and, you know, just like the whole how do you play a part, you know, of being a wrestler. I'm really interested to see that. But I, like I said, I think it only makes sense that they let Ronda Rousey, regardless of what was Kurt Angle or not, you know, win the match and kind of, you know, put her really onto the scene so that we'll see what the future has to bring for her.
I don't think that they brought her along just for her to instantly win this one. It may be like a DQ. I got Triple H and Stephanie winning only because the whole storyline, hey, we own you.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to let her win that easily. So I'm going to say both, well, Triple H and Stephanie. And something that you mentioned is her in-ring performance. I don't think they'll have her in there that long. I think it'll be Triple H and Kurt Angle getting the hell beat out of him. And then all of a sudden, magically, he'll jump over there. Ronda Rousey will come in, and then we'll see from there.
Right.
All right, so the Andre Giant Memorial, I really didn't think about this one. Who did I think was going to win? But now I thought about somebody. Who do you got?
This is one of the only matches that I think is very it's there, but it's never really exciting. I think every year when they do this, it's like, because, okay, what do you get out of winning the match? Nothing really, you know. So, I don't know. I mean, you get like a little trophy or something.
No, it's not a little trophy. It's a big trophy. It's a big trophy.
It's as big, like, Andre the Giant.
Yeah, it's a big trophy.
I don't know. I honestly don't even know who's actually fighting, so.
You know, I'm going to tell you who I think is going to win. It's going to be Rusev Day.
Okay.
Rusev needs to win. And now that I think about it, hey, I know that he's on SmackDown, but hell, put Rusev on Raw and let him and Braun Strowman go together. I just thought about that.
I need to go rivalry right there.
Yes. All right, so we both agree we really don't care, but I like Rusev and Lana.
Is Elias in this match?
Yeah, Elias is in this match. So I can see that too, because he really is, man. I didn't think I was going to like him at first, but he's growing on me, man.
Yeah, he's growing on me too. It's like, and shut your mouth.
Walk with Elias, man. You know what? I'm switching it. I'm going with Elias now that you said that. Now I give you Elias. I still stick with Rusev.
All right. Rusev Day.
It's Rusev Day. If he wins, I'm getting a shirt.
Okay.
All right, so we got the Women's Battle Royal. That was originally the, what was her name? Was it Mae Young?
Yeah, Mae Young Classic.
Well, no, it was the other one. Moolah.
Fabulous Moolah.
But I didn't know all the stuff about her, man. All the shady stuff she did. I'm glad they did change the name. We'll talk about that on the next podcast. Okay. So, who do you got winning?
I'm going to have to go with Mandy Rose, honestly. I think you kind of put me under her, man. I've been watching her, and she's, you know, yeah, she's attractive and good-looking, whatever, but she's actually a really good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, she's been playing the part, you know, the whole trash talking, obviously got the look, got the wrestling inside, been getting more and more attention. And I think it'd be just the fact that even she got put in the crossfires with Ronda Rousey,
uh-huh.
I think it's just a telltale sign that she might be the one that they might be looking to push next. So just because of that reason, Sasha Banks is definitely not going to win. I don't care who else wins.
Her or Bayley, because of that feud that they have going on.
That, and I think they've given her a lot already. There's no way it would make sense to keep giving her more opportunities like that. So I'm going to go with Mandy Rose.
All right, so you picked one person, Absolution. I'm going to pick the other member of Absolution. I'm going Sonya Deville.
Okay.
I think she's like that technician wrestler.
Yeah.
So if it's not going to be them, I think it'll be probably Becky Lynch, because she's been getting pushed over. So I got Sonya Deville or Becky Lynch. But my gut's telling me Sonya Deville. But if Mandy Rose won, oh, my God. I wouldn't be mad at all. All right, so let's move on to a match that we thought was going to happen, but maybe it's not going to happen. But then I heard that this man has been working out for months, so more than likely it's going to happen. Cena versus Taker. Who do you got?
If Cena versus Taker actually does end up happening, which I do believe that'll end up happening, I'm going to go with John Cena. I think John Cena is the only hype is built around this match just because of that. I think this is another legacy match to put on his resume. This will also be another long, drawn-out match. Probably go in the 18 to 20-minute range easily. You know, obviously the entrance for Undertaker is obviously, you know, kind of like Triple H, where everybody wants to see it and how it, you know, pans out. But I think, you know, John Cena probably does take a couple of choke slams and power bombs and
a last ride, hopefully.
Last ride, all that. But I think Cena still prevails, probably hits, you know, four or five F5s and he finally wins.
So I'm going with you. I think Cena will win. It's time for Taker to call it quits in the ring. But now what I would like to see is a new faction come out of Bray Wyatt, Matt Hardy, and Jeff Hardy, and guess who could be their leader? The Undertaker.
Yeah.
That could be a nice faction. So I got Cena winning, turning heel after this because he's beating the Icon. I really hope that happens because he'll be a great heel. So now we got Randy Orton versus Bobby Roode versus Jinder Mahal. Not a match I'm looking forward to.
Might end up being the first match of the night.
You think so?
Possible.
Yeah. So with that said, who you got?
I'm going to go with Bobby Roode. I think he's also another guy, kind of has the whole package. Jinder Mahal, I think he had his run already in the WWE as far as a championship caliber guy. Randy Orton, you know, there's obviously reason to probably pick him too, just because he's kind of been that guy who hasn't had the title in his hand in a while. But I'm going to go ahead and pick Bobby Roode on this one.
I'm going to go Jinder Mahal, only because you can play that role. Okay, I'm the U.S. champion. I can talk to my people and my language and all of that. So he'll be doing that. So he'll be a good heel for the U.S. championship. So I got Jinder Mahal.
Okay.
Lastly, we got Shane with Daniel Bryan versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Who do you got?
I just want to see Daniel Bryan wrestling. I'm going to go with Daniel Bryan and Shane, I think. Daniel Bryan's being able to wrestle, and I think it'll just – this is that match that you want to have the fans just go out of their minds with, you know, him be able to do, you know, do all his finishing moves. You know, Shane, I'm sure, as he always does, is going to do something ridiculously crazy, you know, flying from the top of the stadium or something, who knows. But I see them winning, but I'm really looking forward to seeing Daniel Bryan in the ring. That crowd is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, so I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and I'm going to tell you why. Shane is going to turn on Daniel Bryan in this match.
Oh.
So okay. We're going to have that same yes movement and on SmackDown like it was on Raw. So I got somebody's going to turn on somebody, so I got those two winning because of that.
Okay.
So those are our takes on the Wingworm and our WrestleMania predictions. Next, we'll go down the lane. That's on Sports Life Talk. All right, welcome back to Sports Life Talk. We're going down the lane. First topic, we're going to talk about UConn's Azura Stevens foregoing her senior year at the end of the WNBA draft. Do you think that's smart for her?
I think it is. I think, you know, she probably, I'm sure, wanted to, you know, win a national championship. But, hey, I mean, I got to play for basically the best team in women's college sports in the last 20 years. So, yeah, I mean, she probably wants to go make her money, man, and she's good enough to probably be a top, you know, top pick, so it only makes sense for her to do it. And the guys in the NBA, why not her?
Yeah, and I thought that Kia Nurse or Gabby Williams would be picked before her, but a lot of people were saying that she would go before them because of the potential, because it's hard to coach 6'6".
Yeah.
So I understand it. Like you said, she may have some family matters she needs to take care of. And a couple of years ago, Jewel Lloyd from Notre Dame did it, and people kind of questioned that, and it's worked out for her. So, hey, get your money.
Exactly.
We all about
next
getting
time, you got to do it.
Get your money. So let's talk about something that we didn't see coming. Kyrie Irving being out for the season with that knee surgery. So how does this affect Boston going forward, especially in the playoffs?
Well, I was giving Boston a really good chance of honestly making it all the way to the NBA Finals if Kyrie was able to come back like they initially thought he was going to, probably sometime during the first round. But because just because of the way they play, their system, and they were already winning games. Yeah, I know it's a regular season, but they were winning games without Kyrie. And if you add that to the lineup with the experience that now Jason Tatum, even though he's a rookie, he's a very polished rookie, you know, just in his early in his career already. And then Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Terry Rozier, who's been playing like a starter the entire time Kyrie's been out. So, I mean, you bringing that off your bench, I mean, you know, that's high quality. So, but now with him out, depending on who they match up with in the first round, they could possibly squeak by, but they're not going past that. And I wouldn't be surprised if they even lost in the first round, but I don't see them beating whoever they – well, they probably end up having to play Philly in the second round or the Cavs, more likely Philly, now that Philly's jumped over Cavs for third place. So I could see them, you know, possibly losing in round one, maybe – advancing, but still losing around
too. I see it as a blessing in disguise or karma. It's one of the two. It's a blessing in disguise because you'll be at full strength next year when Hayward comes back.
Yeah.
It could be karma for the comments he made in Cleveland saying, hey, if you guys don't trade me, I'll get the surgery. I'll be done for the year anyway. Right. So you can look at it both ways. But I think it's a good thing because now Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they'll get a lot of run. So
Rozier,
and they'll benefit from this next year.
They'll get Marcus Smart back too.
They'll get Marcus Smart and Boogie Cousin. I'm still holding on to that.
I mean, they got money. They're gonna have a top three pick next year.
Really?
They have a top three pick next year because they have the Lakers pick. So it's a protected pick. It can't fall anything below three is what if I'm not mistaken.
If that happens, can you imagine
Bagley, Payton, Doncic, any of those guys
can be in Boston next year?
Or use the pick to trade for somebody.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
If that happens, if they get one of those guys, they're going to win the championship next year. Early prediction.
Oh, Boston. I'm not betting against. I don't care what. Unless LeBron stays in Cleveland and they go get somebody that we're talking about, like Boogie or Anthony Davis on their team, no, the Celtics are going to take it next year.
Well, let's talk about that in a little bit, in a couple of topics later, about LeBron staying somewhere.
Okay.
All right, so speaking of LeBron, who has the most pressure to win in these playoffs?
Who has the most pressure? Unfortunately, LeBron always has the most pressure.
Well, let's take LeBron off the table because he's always going to have the most pressure. Let's try to think outside the box. Who else do we think?
I'm going to go with Chris Paul. I think Chris Paul is somebody who, as long as he's been in the league, you know, highly touted as one of the, you know, best point guards ever to play the game, first ballot Hall of Famer, but, you know, not even ever being able to take his team to even the conference finals. It's a sad kind of statement to make. I mean, it's kind of like, dude, come on, man. Even Melo's made it to the conference finals, and you haven't, you know? So, and now you're playing on seemingly the best team in the league. You're playing with another superstar where you don't have to carry the load like you were with the Clippers and in New Orleans before that. The sky's the limit. So, he's in the perfect system for his age and what he has to do. He doesn't have to carry the load, like I said. So, I think... I feel like Chris Paul is the person that has the most pressure to definitely make it to the conference finals, and more importantly than that, probably at least make it to the finals, win or lose. And then, you know, he's somebody that I always like rooted for because he's a, you know, pretty classy guy, you know, for being his size and stature, but what he brings to the game, you know, a passion and, you know, like there's a lot of stuff he does. I know in the community, giving back and stuff like that, you know, building basketball courts for kids and, you know, just so many things that I know he does off the court. So he's somebody that I've always, you know, rooted for, and I think it would be cool to see him in the NBA Finals and potentially win it.
I'm going to go with Dwayne Casey, Kyle Lowry, and DeMar DeRozan with Toronto. I think if they don't win it this year or get to the finals, they won't ever do it.
No, they won't.
This is their best opportunity, especially with what happened to Kyrie with LeBron. It's still kind of up in the air with that team. So I'm going to go with Toronto. But I do agree with Chris Paul. He does have a lot of pressure. So we talked, well, we mentioned earlier about LeBron and his destination. This is a topic we can talk about every week.
Yeah.
So with that said, who do you have? Where's a likely or the best landing spot for LeBron James?
So if you had asked me this question, I would say a month ago, I would have still, I'm still going to give the Cavaliers the best. Percentage-wise, I would probably still give them. I would say I was probably inclined to say 60% Cavs, 30% Lakers, 5% Rockets, and 5% Philly is what I would have said if you had asked me a month ago. Now, I pretty much have taken the Lakers down to like 1%.
Yeah, he's not going there.
I am more leaning towards like 80% staying with the Cavs and probably 19% going to the Sixers and 1% going to the Lakers. And in a worst nightmare, I don't want him to go to the Spurs or the Rockets.
And yeah, so. You know that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
The one thing that LeBron is missing is what? A coach. A coach like Pop is going to bring everything that at the 33-0 or 34 next year LeBron could get out of him. It's Coach Pop.
Yeah.
That'll bring Kawhi back. And you talked about Murray, the point guard. You have 6'7", 6'8", and 6'8", on pick and rolls, on switches. How can you stop that?
Right.
And I would like to see him go for Philly because he's never had a big man or another guy that can play exactly like him. But the only thing, do you really want Ben Simmons to defer to LeBron? So that's the only thing I would have a problem with.
That would be the hard part. And Ben Simmons, because he hasn't developed his shooting, it would be really difficult to handle the ball a lot and have, if LeBron is playing point guard, and unless Ben Simmons just becomes a ridiculous post-up player, well, you can't leave him on the wing and he's not going to just spot up behind the three-point line and stand there and shoot.
Yeah.
So that's a downsize, for them. But it would just be amazing to just see them playing like pickup ball because those two guys, on the wing just going out there, and then you got Embiid, you slow the game down, put it down there to him. There's just so many mix and match lineups you could run. LeBron and Embiid, Ben Simmons on the bench. You got shooters around. Embiid can shoot too, right? So it would be really cool to see. I think, it would kind of make up for Allen Iverson not winning a championship. Like, I think they would be right there. When Philly was really good in the, late 90s, especially early 2000s, man, like, that fan base is crazy. And, as you can tell, with the Eagles and stuff. So I think it'd be pretty cool to see them kind of get a spotlight. Just the way that they played the Cavs the other day, even though, they didn't have Embiid. But, you could just see, how the momentum of their team, the organization, the fan base is, really growing. They got two young mega superstars that are going to be in this league for a long time. And that Sixers franchise better make sure not to mess with those two guys. You better keep them, build around them. They Covington's a good role player. They got J.J. Redick, shooter. You got Darius Harsh, They got solid pieces on their team. And then, those sleeper pickups of Bellinelli and Ilyasova. They have – and even Fultz. Fultz is actually good. So I know people are ragging on him about his, the way he shoots his jumper and stuff. But, hey, at the end of the day, as long as it goes in. So if Sean Marion can make jump shots, so can Fultz. There's a reason why he was the number one pick because he wasn't just – you weren't just picking him up because – maybe he had a good shot, but it just looked unorthodox. No, he could do a lot of other things on the court. When Ben Simmons comes off the court, you put him in, another number one pick. You basically got number one pick. Joel Embiid, if you had to redo the draft, would have been a number one pick.
Yeah.
He only fell to three because of the injuries. You bring LeBron, another number one pick, all-time great. And who better to train and teach Ben Simmons to be like him, but knowing how LeBron is, he's going to be like, no, you can be better than me, and here's how you do it, and so he's going to show him how to not only work on your craft, but how to really take care of your body. You're going to start making millions. Make sure you set aside a good percentage of that that's completely dedicated just to your body, You know, and Ben Simmons doesn't, we haven't heard any news about him, like, hitting the clubs and drinking, partying. Even when he was in college, you never heard any of that. So there's a reason why he's also with LeBron's management company.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they knew before he even was playing at LSU, like, this is the guy that's going to be on our, under our wing, because he looks the part, you know, the height, the look, the, you know, his background from Australia, all of that, it really made sense for them to push him. So now that he's actually displaying all those things also on the court, man, like, you know, that Clutch Sports Group is going to be, go ask some athletes in there that are going to be prime superstar, megastars in the league.
And can you imagine this? The Eagles won, Villanova won. How about the Sixers won? The city of Philadelphia probably get burned down.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. All right. So let's talk about the most clutch shot ever.
I would definitely have to say Ray Allen's shot in Game 6. It's definitely, I mean, for me at least, I mean, maybe it's because, like, I still remember where I was sitting, who I was watching the game with, and what I was doing. But it's not only the shot, when he hit it, how he hit it, what the time, how much time in the game was left, what game in the series it was in the finals, and in the event that he didn't make the shot, or whether he missed or that shot didn't even get taken by him to be missed or made, it's the chain of events that would have created if that shot was never made, because, you know, Miami just won a championship. Now they would have been basically, you know, 1-2 since he brought the big three together. You know, I feel like Bosch would have probably got traded for somebody, and they would have just had to do a shakeup, because clearly they would have felt like it wasn't working. Even though, I mean, the Spurs were a really, really well-oiled machine with Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, Kawhi, like, all playing, you know, together. So I think I'm going to have to say Ray Allen's shot, because even though it wasn't a game winner, it was like it took the life out of the Spurs.
Nah, it's hard to disagree with that, because that was the baddest shot I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But Arike Ogunbowale, the shot that she took in the national championship game, that three-pointer.
Yeah.
And she did another one to beat UConn.
Yeah.
So she had two of them back-to-back. So it's hard to disagree with Ray Allen. I don't think I am, but I want to give a shout out to her, because that, when I saw it going in the air, I think I saw you. I sent you a text as soon as it happened.
Yeah.
I can't repeat it on air, but I was like, man, can you believe this? You know what? Because, you know, I love UConn. So I want to give her some love, but it's hard to disagree with that Ray Allen.
And even, was it a couple of years ago when North Carolina? Oh, yeah, it was 2 years ago when North Carolina lost at the buzzer.
To Villanova.
Man, that was a heartbreaker for me, because I was, like, excited. And then, like, I think they showed a little highlight of Kenny Smith. I was like, yeah, they made the shot. And then, like, they didn't even call a timeout. They just, you know, I think they pushed it in. Da-da-da-da. He went up, right past half court, shot it, and drilled it. I mean, it was a buzzer beater to win the national championship. I mean, you can't. I mean, that's the ultimate. I mean, the only thing that could ever get better than that is Game 7 NBA Finals at the buzzer, somebody winning in regulation. And that would be the only shot that could ever be. And I'm sure one day something like that will happen. But until that happens,
Yeah, but yeah, Ray Allen, we'll give it to you, man. You're the GOAT. All right, we tackle life next on Sports Life Talk. All right, another thing we didn't see coming in the sports world was RG3 signing with the team before Colin Kaepernick. This time, he signed a 1-year deal with the Ravens. Do you think this was smart for the Ravens to do?
Definitely not. I mean, considering that they were one of the few teams that actually was supposedly on the verge of giving Colin Kaepernick a contract last year, or, you know, so, and him being on the team, and then they decided to say, like, no, he deserves to be a starter. He doesn't need to be a backup. That was your way out of not, you know, picking him up on your team. But, yeah, man, I mean, seeing stuff like this is obviously very frustrating, because, you know, when you just look at, if you just do the basic eyeball test, it just makes more sense to have Colin Kaepernick than RG3 because he's a better version of RG3.
Yeah, he's durable.
Throwing the ball, running the ball. I think even IQ on the field. And I feel like he also, even though he hasn't been playing, I think he probably even puts in more work into his craft than even RG3 does. Sorry, RGIII. But, you know, man, it's Ravens, you know, it's like all the way back from the whole Ray Lewis situation. Always end up making almost the right decision, and then they don't.
But just that whole Ray Lewis situation, talking about can he make your team better? Kaepernick could make your team better.
Right.
RG3 doesn't.
No.
If something happens to Joe Flacco and then RG3, and something's going to happen to RG3, he's going to get injured. He's going to get injured. And then what you going to do? Then you should call Colin Kaepernick, but you're still going to do it.
No, you're
going to do it. He should be in the NFL this year.
I know.
I would hope somebody like maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers will step up.
I was actually going to say the same thing. I'm like, wouldn't it be the irony would have been the Steelers pick him up, Big Ben gets hurt, Ravens and they go at it, and
Pittsburgh makes it to the Super Bowl.
And even with Joe Flacco, Colin Kaepernick can beat you. So it's like Ravens are looking at like, man, we could have had Colin Kaepernick.
You know what? I want that to happen, even though I don't want the Pittsburgh Steelers to win because, you know, I want the Cowboys. Right. But I would love, that would be the ultimate not comeback redemption story.
Absolutely.
All right. So next, let's talk about the Patriots wanting Baker Mayfield. Do you think that's a good match?
Man, that's tough just because of Bill Belichick. He's the wild card here when it comes to stuff like this and obviously having, you know, the quarterback. But, you know, the way he's passionate about the game, I mean, Mayfield, like how he played in college, how he was a leader on the field with all his guys. And I think those are, you know, traits that Bill Belichick definitely looks for. You know, that's something that Tom Brady has with his team. You know, is able to lead the troops, as you would say, being the leader, you know, on the football field. So I think just because of that, you know, alone, I think Mayfield has a, you know, he seems like he has high IQ. You know, being able to read defenses in the pocket also. And then, like he said, even though he didn't make, like, some of the best decisions, you know, on the sidelines with his, like, whether it's remarks or dropping F-bombs or grabbing his crotch or whatever, but at the end of the day, he has passion. He wants to win. So, you know, I think that hunger and desire is something that Bill Belichick writes, and he can probably give him a little more, you know, tunnel, I guess, to kind of hold it together, but then, like, produce it onto the field and, you know, put your passion out there. I think it would be pretty cool. I think you know, Mayfield to go in and learn behind Tom Brady, but he can understand the, you know, the craft side of, you know, trying to stay in the league for 15 years and those are the things you're going to have to do. And it's a, you know, their offense is very, you know, predicated on, you know, three-step drop, five-step drop, real quick, slants, in routes, you know, not too many, you know, not too many deep balls and stuff like that. So, you know, I think it would fit well for him.
If anybody can bring that dog out of Baker Mayfield and humble him and, you know, bring, you know, all that passion out, it will be Belichick. And we all know the Patriot way, which I really don't agree with, but the results speak in itself.
Right.
So I think there'll be a match made in heaven for Baker for Mayfield. You go from one winning team to, like, one of the ultimate teams in the franchise. Patriots,
in sports, and I think, you know, he doesn't have all the tools, physical tools, I feel like, but he's got that it factor about him. You know, he's a way better Tim Tebow. But he has the it factor that Tim Tebow had, even though his talent didn't speak for itself. His it factor made up for the lack of the talent that he brought to the table. So, and I think it's that. I think it's like you always saw whenever he was talking to his team, all his players were tuned in and listening. Just like when Tim Tebow spoke when he was in Florida, like, or even in the NFL, like, people listen. Because the message he has, kid, they know he's going to back up whatever he's saying about himself. Hey, I just need to do my part because he's definitely going to do his 110%. And I think that's the same thing that Mayfield has. And that, like you said, Bill Belichick is that perfect guy who can take that, you know, hide the negatives, but bring out the positives even to an extra level that, you haven't even seen yet. And plus, you know, he's still young. He's still growing, you know, mentally, physically, the whole nine. So the sky's the limit for Baker Mayfield.
All right, so let's move on to Herm Edwards and keeping it too real. He made comments in college about, hey, if you're not good, you're not performing, I'll cut you. And a lot of people found that wasn't the right thing to say, especially with college. So what do you think about those comments, man?
Yeah, I think it can be twofold because on one part, you know, you're supposed to be going to college for your education. So it's not necessarily to like, oh, I want to make the team. And especially if you're good enough to probably go pro, you're probably not going to get cut. So if you're getting cut, you're on the cusp of being on the team or not being on the team, then that means you're probably not going to go pro. So, you know, you need to work extra hard to be on the team. If not, you can still be here to what you really came here for, which was the education side of it. So I understand that on that part, but on the other side of it also, I see that, hey, you know, at the end of the day, he's the coach. He's like, keeping it real and doing his job description tells him that he's supposed to do. Like, if you're not performing, I mean, and how would you, you know, and maybe that's what certain, you know, kids might need because maybe their talent is good enough to be on the team, but their work ethic isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you tell them, like, I'm going to cut you, maybe that'll make you work harder. Or if I do cut you, you know, even if you get transferred or whatever, you're going to now work harder to be on a team because you feel like you want to play so badly. Well, you know, put it out there. So if you don't put it out there, if you just let everything slide, especially now that he's a new coach, you know, it's like he needs to kind of put his stamp down. You know, he needs to put his foot down and be like, this is the way it's going to be run around here so that you know what you're getting yourself into.
Well, with Herm, this is the ultimate putting life into sports. Herm Edwards is the ultimate leader of men.
Yes.
I will give him credit.
I would definitely play for him any day.
Any day. He's about winning, but he's also about taking care of his guys.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of man that you need in college because Herm Edwards is not going to say one thing and do the other.
Right.
For Arizona State, he's going to be there for a while. He's going to build that program up, and I hope they give him a chance to do that.
Right.
So this is the ultimate teaching lesson.
Yeah.
Hey, man, if you don't do your job, you're out.
Yeah.
This is basically like what Mike Vrabel said. This is the best minor league system in the world. So, hell, this is how life goes. You mess up, you don't do your job, you're not here.
Right.
So this is a great teaching moment, and I'm glad Herm said it, and I hope he gets a chance to finish his tenure at Arizona State. So Dez Bryant is hearing those rumors and everything, so – how do you think Dez is feeling about these trade rumors?
Shoot, I mean, well, he's the same guy who said, what, like a month and a half ago that now he's going to really, you know, put in that extra work. Like, where the extra work wasn't going in, that extra work better be only about two things. Standing there, just stand and catch 1,000 footballs a day, literally on both sides of the ball, I mean, on both sides of your body. And number two is running routes. I mean, being precise in running routes. Those are the only two things that Dez Bryant needs to work on. But if you wanted to wait till 3 years of down years and then now you say you want to do it because you know you're going to get asked to take a pay cut or we might trade you or might just cut you, period. I mean, I don't think anybody can, blame Dez besides Dez. Like, Dez has to blame himself for being in this predicament. If you, you know, wanted to wear 88, you know, you went in for, asked for permission, Michael Irvin gave it to you, and, you know, for those first couple of years, you were
living up to it, yeah.
If, you know, usually wide receivers maybe start having down years because they played so many years, and, you know, it's, okay, now it's starting to come down, you know, the age is kicking in, and you know, it happened with, like, Andre Johnson and some of those other guys who they had a 10-year run and then, like, 11, 12, 13 was kind of like, eh. But that's kind of understood. But, like, no, like, you got your contract, and then as soon as you got your contract, you just started not playing really well. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. So, and you're not in that stage of career. I mean, if Larry Fitzgerald can do what he does at his age, he's probably like 7 years older than you, and he's right now playing better than you. It doesn't make any sense. And I mean, shoot, there's guys on your own team that are not even well touted, but they're playing better than they at least cast the ball if it's thrown their way, you know. So it's like what he doesn't realize is me not doing what I'm supposed to do at a high level. Every time I don't catch a pass, and if it was, you know, 2nd and 9, and I dropped the ball, now it's 3rd and 9. Now the defense knows they could.
We got to throw the ball,
you know, or if it is 3rd and 10, and we need that first down to try to come back in the game, or we're up in the game by 3, you know, and now because you didn't catch the ball, we got to punt it. The other team comes back and kicks the field goal, tie, score a touchdown to win. So it's like it's a trickle down effect that he needs to really compile. It's not just you dropping the ball or not route running. It's what does that do to your team? Why? You know, they have to, you not all you're doing is putting more pressure on Dak. And you're putting, you know, and then now him as a Dak as a quarterback, should I throw you away? Because my, you know, it affects my stats and completion percentage too, because you're not catching. You know what I mean? So.
And you remember Dak made a comment, well, I guess I got to throw it directly in his chest for him to catch the ball.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I don't know how you should feel. I don't know. I mean, he should feel. Bad, but he should only feel bad because he knows I'm the one who put myself in this position.
I hope this humbled him to let him know that, hey, yeah, you thought you were an elite receiver, a top five, and I used to go to bat for you. I'm in barbershops fighting for you.
Yeah.
Can't do that anymore because you're not a top five receiver. And once you got your contract, once you mentioned, and you wear the number 88 and you start declining, and you're not even 30 yet, that's not a good look, man. And
no. Or you didn't have a ridiculous significant injury to speak of either.
Yeah, exactly. And then you mentioned
ACL or something like that.
You mentioned off air to me how the Cowboys were trying to get Sammy Watkins, who, when I think about it, he can stretch the field. So that really made sense. Dez, he won't stretch the field. No. It's just
he's stretching that payroll check.
Exactly. So I hope this has humbled him, and I don't feel sorry for him because he's making his money. And like you said, he brought this on himself. So let's move on to our next segment on what's on our mind. And what's on our mind is on what's on everybody's mind right now. That's Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen the video, please go Google it. If you're on Facebook or Twitter, you can easily see that video. So what are your comments on his behavior? And first of all, do you think this was staged?
You know, there's a small part of me that when I first heard that theory, I was like, I can see it. I don't think now... Even if it was, let's just say hypothetically, it was semi-staged, I don't think they thought he would take it to the level.
Yeah, he took it overboard.
Because he was improvising.
Yeah.
He just, you know, if it wasn't planned out thoroughly, then, and it might have, even if it was planned, it might have been just planned, but only with McGregor, not with the other fighters, right? But it's like, kind of give the WWE feel to it a little bit, right? But I think maybe... Like, he didn't know, like, oh, I'm going to attack the bus. Oh, I'm going to take this dolly and actually throw it. Like, I don't know to what degree, like, he planned it out or if it would be just improvising. Now, if it was straight up, like, not staged, I mean, there's a part of me that really likes this, that it happened. But on the flip side, obviously, when you're talking about, like, it injuring other people, and affecting their bottom line and their paycheck, and UFC it affecting, you know, 3 of their fights that didn't end up happening. So when it comes to stuff like that, I'm just kind of like, you know, I have a soft spot for that, so I didn't like it. But just the mere fact that, hey, you messed with my boy. I mean, they basically cornered his boy like 10 or 12 to 1, you know, pushing him around, slapping him around, blah, blah, blah. So, so once he got wind of it, you know, he took his private jet, put 10, 15 of his guys, hey, we're flying to Barclays Center right now, let's go. Got into Barclays, you know, got to the back, whatever, figure out some workers that they know that are part of kind of more on their team and let them in. So, I mean, it was just unfortunate. Obviously, a couple of the guys got injured and stuff like that. And then, you know, he turned himself in and, you know, accept the consequences, I guess. But, you know, it kind of had like a movie feel to it, a little bit of WWE feel to it. You know, I don't like the part of that about injuring other people. But other than that, man, it was cool.
I'm glad you mentioned the WWE feel about it, because that's exactly where this is heading. the next time he's in the ring, it's going to be in the WWE. You know who's going to be his opponent? CM Punk. Mm. That's going to happen.
You think so?
I think that's going to happen. I think if the money is right,
oh yeah,
CM Punk versus Conor McGregor, WrestleMania next year, could you see that?
I could. I can see where you're going with that.
That's going to be our new hashtag on Twitter. Conor McGregor, CM Punk, WrestleMania. It's going to happen.
So it's going to be a wrestling match?
It's going to be a wrestling match. It won't be UFC.
Huh. Interesting.
Could you imagine the pop on that?
Oh, my God. It would be... You're talking about you already have millions of WWE fans. Now you're bringing the UFC world to it. Or not even UFC world to it, just Conor McGregor fans. That's a whole another fan base that isn't maybe necessarily into WWE, right?
And I think with his antics, how he went overboard, the UFC, they're going to have to suspend him for like a year or 6 months or something like that. If I'm McGregor, okay, I'll go to WWE.
Yeah. Because
he can really talk that mess.
Oh, yeah. And you know, because things are a lot more controlled in WWE, it's you know, obviously improvising and stuff like that, you don't have to do as much because it's kind of there. He's kind of like The Rock. You just give him the mic and he can go to work. You know, you don't have to train him. You know, kind of like you have to train Ronda Rousey because that's not her niche, right?
Oh, and then speaking of Ronda Rousey, she even came out and said that she hopes that Paul Heyman can speak for her.
Oh, okay. I can see that because I think it was like when he was talking about Brock Lesnar, he was in the ring with Brock, he like threw out her name. It was kind of like a subtle like, yeah, I'm coming, you know. So, but I think with Conor McGregor, it would have been just cool to like, I was like, okay, maybe this is just a hype too, because he ended up having to relinquish both his titles that he won. I'm like, this would be the best way to get back in and be like, I'm going to come prove a point. But now the money negotiations are going to have to be a little better. But let me go ahead and come back, get my first title back that I gave up. Let me come back. I'm going to go get my second title that I gave up to prove a point that y'all can take the belts back because I'm not fighting, but I'm still the best. I'll just come back in here just to prove a point. And then after I win it, you can take the titles back again because now I'm going to make significantly more money than I've ever made in those previous fights. And if you want me to fight, you better hit this number. If you can't hit this number, or I get a share of the pay-per-view sales or something like that, I'm not fighting. And if I'm not fighting, you don't really have anybody right now. Now that I'm not there, Ronda Rousey's not there, John Jones is not there, who are you really promoting? I mean, Anderson Silva's pretty much out of there. I mean, there's, you know, I know GSP came back for one fight. He may or may not come back. So it's like, you don't really have that, like, upper echelon. I mean, there's some good fighters out there, but you don't have somebody that's, like, just when you think UFC, you automatically think Conor McGregor. When you think UFC, you automatically think Ronda Rousey. You know, 8 to 10 years ago, when you think UFC, you think Brock Lesnar. It was just one of those things. Now you think UFC, like, you're going to say Conor McGregor, but if he's not fighting, you don't really have that one star that you're, like, always, like, putting the face to that. You know, and you, all the pay-per-views are going to do decent numbers. I mean, don't get me wrong. Regardless of pretty much who's fighting, but I mean, I watched the UFC fight last night, but I don't see the whole Mayweather McGregor in the octagon. I know he's going to train with Tyron Woodley and stuff, but I don't know. I don't see that. At least not as his first match. Maybe he comes in for a tune-up versus somebody else.
Yeah, he has to fight somebody that's more his style. Is more of a boxer in UFC. Because once those legs start flying, he's done. Right. It doesn't matter who he fights. And he's already 41.
Exactly. And he'd probably be 42 by the time he ends up fighting McGregor.
Yeah, he said it depends on the money. Hey, just live off the money you had off Conor McGregor. Don't do it, man. Doesn't make sense. So you want to talk about Ben Simmons and that performance he and LeBron put on the other night was something for the ages. So go ahead. I'll let you take over. What you got?
Man, he had triple-double in basically less than three quarters. It's just like, you know, 2 inches taller, faster, possibly even as athletic as when LeBron came, you know, into the league. His vision, I think it's like he predicated his game kind of after LeBron, so it's like his vision, whatever LeBron can do passing-wise, he's like doing it just a oomph better. Like, LeBron's passing right now is probably the best that it's ever been, right? So, but LeBron had 18 couldn't pass like this.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron at 18 can't pass the ball like LeBron now. So LeBron at 18 can't even pass the ball as good as Ben Simmons right now. Right? So if Ben Simmons is projected to, of course, get better, well, if he's going to get better and if his passing is almost already as good as LeBron's at his best, imagine when he's 10 years down the road what he could do. I'm going to for sure say that he is the next, you know, I feel like he could, even though he's going to have Embiid on his team, he's going to be the best all-around player in basketball in 5 years. I think in 2 to 3 years, I would probably say Giannis will be the best player, but I think it'll be very short-lived. I think Ben Simmons will be the best all-around player because he will figure out a way to get a jump shot. He'll eventually start in 3 to 4 years, probably have a decent 35% three-point shot.
Yeah.
And he will be the next guy, basically, after Russell Westbrook, that will average a triple-double for multiple seasons, I feel like, in his prime. And without barring any injuries, I could see him averaging a triple-double 3-4 years in a row in his prime.
And we're basically looking at the next LeBron.
Yeah.
He has more time to develop a jump shot, so if I'm him, I'm doing that now.
Yeah.
This summer, that's the part of the game I'm working on is my jump shot because everything else I got. Now I want to talk about that Cleveland game. Some of the defense that was played was just atrocious. They were just going to the lane, just free dunking. I'm like, come on, y'all.
I mean, it's the first half was just – I mean, I even had to turn off the game for like 5-10 minutes. I was like, this is – but you saw they played defense in the third quarter when they came back in the game. What? Because now, oh, the help is helping the helper. And then if you rotate, oh, now I've got to go help that helper. So, but it's like you guys aren't putting that extra effort or trapping the guy with the ball if you are coming out to pick and roll. Like, trap the guy with the ball, especially if it's Ben Simmons. Well, you got to bring height. Well, like, you got to put LeBron or Jeff Green on him. And, you know, and then make sure probably don't leave J.J. Redick. Let Ilyasova shoot. Let Saric shoot. Let Covington shoot. I mean, even though he's a great 3-point shooter, like, you gotta, kind of like on the Rockets, you gotta let somebody else beat you that's not James Harden. You gotta let somebody else beat you, because, and the other thing was they were picking up Ben Simmons 3/4 court, like, so even when the ball gets inbounded, he's not like running fast down to half court. They're already like, it's kind of like he's already running down the court with the ball while the half court set is already running. So now it's like, because there's so much movements going around while he's dribbling the ball, well, you're not really paying attention to him because you had to play defense on your man. Well, now the lane just open. He just does 1-2 dribbles, and he's already at the rim. And, you know, or you're seeing all these curls and back screens. So the defenders start looking that direction. Well, that's just an open lane for him to just go. Or now if you collapse, you know, he does what LeBron does. He just kicks it back out, and you've got shooters around. And that's the unique thing that they have on their team that no other team has is when Joel Embiid is on the court. Even if he's somebody that you kick it out to, usually you say, like, oh, no, we'll let the big man shoot. No, you can't let him shoot because he's a good 3-point shooter for a big man. That, you know, that's one thing. Like, Kevin Love can shoot on the calf. Tristan Thompson can't shoot as a big man on the court. And, you know, Larry Nance can't shoot threes. So just by that mere fact alone, like, you could see where the Sixers are headed 5-10 years down the road. They got two cornerstone pieces. You basically got Penny and Shaq, Kobe and Shaq, together in their primes already, and probably, especially when Penny and Shaq were playing, they were this young. But they are better versions of Penny and Shaq.
Can you imagine that being a better version of Penny and Shaq?
I don't know. I mean, they could definitely be the next greatest thing, man, for sure.
Well, that was episode 15 of Sports Life Talk, where life without sports is just talk. We want to thank the Roberts Media Group for giving us a platform to bring our podcast to you. I want to thank Serge. I want to thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, pay the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Yeah.